Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening and welcome to the Commonwealth Club Inforum. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. You can watch our videos or on our past programs on fora.tv, or you can join the community at Instagram. I guess I have an Instagram account at InformSF, and also at facebook.com/InformSF. I'm Kevin Rose, general partner at Google Ventures, and tonight Inform is hosting a no-filter conversation with the founders of Instagram, Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger. Kevin Systrom is the co-founder of Instagram, first got his start at Odeo, as an intern actually, which later became Twitter. He spent 2 years at Google before co-founding Instagram with Mike. Kevin was recently named to Time's list of 100 most influential people, which is pretty awesome. Mike Krieger, co-founder of Instagram, here to my left, moved to California from Brazil in 2004, has a background in human-computer interaction and user experience. And is the secret man behind all things scaling of Instagram. And speaking of scaling, you guys are now at 100 million users plus and 5 billion photos. Does that shock you guys at all? Is like, do you wake up in the morning and are like, how in the hell did we get here?
Yeah, I remember week one, I turned to Kevin. Kevin was looking at me. He's like, dude, I don't know how big this is going to get, but I know we've created something that's going to take off. And I was like, I don't know. Like, for the first, like, year, I was like, next week is the week that everybody stops using it. And, like, I still have that fear a little bit, but less and less.
He is not kidding.
I was like, oh, when's the graph? But, yeah, it's incredible.
Let's start at the very beginning, though, and talk about how you guys first got started in tech. Mike, let's start with you.
Sure. So I graduated from Stanford in 2009. And I went to work at the startup called Meebo, which did like an online chat thing. And I started out doing user experience because that's what I'd studied in school, because I knew I really wanted to, I had been often frustrated at how hard it was to use computers. My original inspiration was watching people, I used to tutor like basic computer skills at my high school in Brazil. And these were folks that were like in the maintenance department, like not techie, not at all. And it was like so hard to understand, like, why do you click this link, but you double click this thing? There's like all these subtleties that
we all have that with our parents, I think.
Yeah.
You're trying to teach your parents computers.
Exactly. And you're like, this is way harder than it needs to be. So that's why I studied in school. I'm like, this has to be easier, you know? Then you realize the reason it gets so complicated is the trade-offs that you make over and over, right? But yeah, I left Stanford, did Meebo for a year and a half. And then met up with Kevin at a coffee shop one morning, and he's like, Mike, this bourbon thing you've been using on the weekends, like, I'm going to do this full time. I'm going to raise money. Are you in?
So that's really interesting, because you guys actually started bourbon first prior to starting Instagram. So you were a pivot. Like, you guys got together to create a program called Bourbon, which is nothing like what Instagram became. Like, yeah. Well, Kevin, go ahead and walk us up to speed on how you got into creating Bourbon and how you got into tech.
Sure. My introduction into tech was actually very early on when my uncle gave me this laptop. And not a lot of people in this room will remember when laptops had two colors. It was green and black. And I remember getting it, and he's like, oh, I had this thing lying around. You should take a look. And it had a couple games on it, and that's all it really took me to really get hooked. And then I realized, he actually is in programming, and he told me, you can actually create these things with programming. You can actually code. So he taught me a few commands, and before you knew it, I just started programming. And I programmed, and I programmed, and I programmed on the side. And then through high school, I took classes, got into trouble making programs that helped kick my friends offline on AOL and Prodigy. Actually got our family account deleted once because of that. But, you know, all of that led to college, where I went to Stanford as well and took a computer science class my first quarter. And I got in the computer science class, and I looked around, and I was like, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna do it really well. And it was the hardest class I had ever taken in my entire life. And I still remember getting a C on my first assignment and thinking, like, what has the world come to? How can I fail so badly? And I decided, you know what, I didn't want to do computer science anymore because I wanted to do things really well. So I actually switched to product design and then a different major and a different major and ended up doing basically the equivalent of a business degree in undergrad. But that hopping around and realizing that maybe coding wasn't my forte was really what led me to entrepreneurship and realizing that I wanted to do lots of different stuff. And when I decided to leave my current day job and work on what was going to be Bourbon, I decided I wanted to get back into coding, and I realized how much I love that. And I often say my one regret from college is not sticking through the tough times, not sticking through the times when you get a C on an assignment. And, you know, focusing on Bourbon was a lot of fun because it brought Mike and I together. Mike was one of the first users, and when he joined, actually, the first day, I was like, welcome to the team. We're going to work on something completely different. And he looked at me like, what did I just do? I just left my day job, and now I'm working at this startup, and you're telling me I'm going to work on something different. And it was photos.
Talk to us about Bourbon, though, real quick. For people, because most people here had never heard of Bourbon, what were you trying to create that didn't work out?
Mike always recounts this. Our homepage actually says, or it said on bourbon.com, which I don't know, is that still up?
It's dead now.
It's dead, yeah. Okay. Got to renew that domain. It said, a new way to communicate and share in the real world. And that's what we wanted to be about. We wanted to take communication and sharing from your mobile phone out in the real world and reinvent it. And the way we did that was essentially through check-ins. And you could come here and check in that you were at the Castro Theater. You could check in that you were at a restaurant. And it let you share your location with friends, a la Foursquare, Gowalla, a lot of others at the time. And part of that was being able to actually share an image along with a check-in. And it turned out that the people who used Bourbon the most loved the part where you could share an image. And I was on this vacation actually with my girlfriend after Mike and I had been prototyping Bourbon for a while. And she said, you know, I love the posts with photos, but I feel like I just don't take photos that are nearly as good as your friend Greg. And I was like, well, that's because Greg uses Hipstamatic and Camera Bag and all these things to filter his photos. And she was like, wait, I can make my photos look like that too. And I was like, sure. So we downloaded some apps and she started taking photos. And I realized the key for her, there were two keys. One was photography was the key to Bourbon. And two was we had to make photography accessible. And through doing that, the rest is history. And we came back from that vacation. Mike and I put our heads together. And I think we built Instagram in, what, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
It's 2 months.
Who came up with the name?
That's a good question. Oh, you know what? It was my job to sit and research a name. And like a good CEO, I spent a week trying to research a name. And we called it, what was it initially?
It was Codename for a long time.
Yeah, it was Codename because we didn't want any of the users of Bourbon to be angry that we were working on something else. And in fact, when they found out we were working on something else, they were like, we'll never use that. And it was Codename, and then we were sitting together one day with a big long list, and I remember you and I sitting next to each other with a list on a paper, and we were crossing things off, and we were down to two, and I don't remember what the other one was, but we said Instagram, and we're like, that's it. And it just clicked. And I think it was a combination of Instant and Telegram. It was the idea that you could take a moment in time, and you could capture it, and you could just send it out and broadcast it with the entire world.
What was it like on launch day? I mean, you guys got out there. I'm assuming, I mean, you had integration with Twitter right off the bat, so you could share photos out socially. Was it just tremendous growth from day one, or was it something where it took a few weeks, or what was...
It was insane from, like, an hour. Well,
tell the real story.
We were going to, you know, get all the press lined up and hope that nobody was going to, like, leak it early. And we said, okay, I think it was, like, 8 a.m., So we're like, okay, great. The App Store sometimes, you know, you say like, hey, I want my app out there. It can take a couple hours to actually do it. And you don't want to look dumb like, hey, my new app is out. And like, it's actually not available. So we're like, we'll play it safe. We'll hit the button at midnight. And we hit the button. Kevin hit the button from his house. And within a minute, 2 minutes, we already had people signing up. So we had tried to do our best to like, in the weeks before, build up interest by giving out promo codes. We would do this thing where we'd say on Twitter like, hey, like, we're going to give out a promo code that lets you have early access to the app in the next hour. Like, tweet at us if you're interested. And, like, just kind of built up interest. And we let all our beta testers actually share to Twitter. So instead of keeping it super secret, we'd say, like, and were you a beta tester back then? I don't think we knew you back then.
No, I met you guys probably about 2 or 3 weeks after launch.
After that, right.
Yeah.
So we had a great group of testers who were, you know, Silicon Valley designers, engineers who we knew, people from Florida, too. And, like... they were posting and starting to drum up interest. So when we launched, it turns out there had been this like pent-up interest in it, and we got a sign up within a minute, and I remember getting to the office. At the time I was still biking around San Francisco, so I biked at 6 a.m. It was freezing, and I was like shaking because I was so nervous. And I think Kevin had gotten, you got breakfast for us. I had no idea. I didn't eat it because I was so nervous. And sure enough, like the sign-up started coming in, and neither of us had had any experience like scaling a website to many people using it. We look back now on the mistakes we made scaling-wise on that first day were like pretty beginner mistakes, but we were beginners, so it makes sense that we'd make those mistakes. I remember our site going down, and John Gruber, who writes this blog during Fireball, it's like a big blog in like the tech and iOS and Mac community, he had written about it. He's like, hey, this is a pretty interesting app. I don't think I'll use it. Turns out he ended up using it, but hey, it looks okay, but like nice design. And then he did update. The site's down. I don't think they know what they're doing. I was like, oh, this is the worst moment ever. And I felt so crushed. And this is like an incredible day. I called our hosting company at the time. We were hosted in a single machine that was about as powerful as like our laptops nowadays in LA. And I called them like, hey, this thing actually took off. Can you give me more machines? We need more capacity. They're like, yeah, it's going to be like 4 days because we got to like order the parts. And I was like, no, we need it like today, like right now. And sure enough, like 2 days later, we're like, no, we need to switch to Amazon's cloud service so that we like, when we get a big rush of users, when Memorial Day hits, we can add capacity right then and there instead of having to wait for like a 4 day turnaround.
Yeah. One of the things that you guys, it seems that in kind of retrospect and looking back at the company over time, you guys were really slow to hire. Like engineers, like I remember when I met you guys, it was like maybe you had one other person working with you. And then even months, 6 months later when you had already grown to, I'm sure if you're at a million users yet at that point, but why were you only at acquisition, 7 people or something like that?
Yeah, I spend the majority of my time now recruiting, hiring, talking to people about recruiting and hiring. When we joined Facebook, we were 16 people. And now we're well over 34. And in fact, that doubling happened very, very quickly over the course of a handful of months. We were slow to grow, and part of that was feeling literally handcuffed to your computer, trying to make the site stay up. Not a lot of people understand how hard it was to make Instagram solid at the beginning. Mike and I missed birthdays. We missed, weekends with friends, girlfriends, just making sure that the site could keep up. And it was always something different every time, whether it was Japan's waking up, we have to make sure that the site stays up. Literally, there were like times of the day, and I think, I can't remember exactly the time of day, but we'd be like, oh, Japan's waking up because the server alarms are going off. And it was one of the biggest countries from the beginning. But part of it was just like we didn't take the time on the side to like find people that would help us get out of that rut. And it's probably a rookie mistake, but at the same time, like this site and service wouldn't be there without having hired, I think, the best team technology has ever seen. I mean, Mike, we call him the server whisperer. He's able to like understand exactly what's going on by touching the servers.
You need a t-shirt. You seriously need a t-shirt that says the server whisperer. That's pretty amazing.
I'm going to get that for him. But like, Shane, one of our early engineers, just relentless at figuring out what the problems were that were plaguing the servers. And I know people don't quite understand because, we have our computers and you put them on your desk and they just work, right? And maybe sometimes you get the spinny ball of death or maybe it overheats and the fan goes on. We're not talking about servers lighting on fire or anything. We're just talking about fundamentally like too many people accessing one computer at one time. And figuring out how to scale that is not easy, especially when you're two guys. Mike was doing statistics and graphical work at Meebo, and I was doing marketing at a small startup. Like, we had to figure out this stuff out from scratch. And hiring was one of the key things that we learned along the way. Like, finding the right people and building that core team was instrumental in getting to the scale we were.
Mm-hmm. The thing you don't realize, too, about hiring is, by the time you need to hire, it's too late.
Yep.
Because there's a huge amount of lead time. And now, like,
right.
I have a couple of startups that I advise, and I'm like, even if you guys don't feel like you need somebody else now, start talking to people today, because they're going to tell you no, and then 6 months later, they're going to say, actually, I'm thinking about leaving my job now. Let's talk.
Right.
But you need that lead time.
And then there's a couple months of ramping up just to get familiar
Definitely.
With everything.
Yeah. And sure. I don't think we didn't realize that as much. So by the time we needed people, we were already underwater, and then it was just, all right, double down and keep working hard.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the features that you created in the first version of Instagram, specifically some of the stuff around tagging. I mean, hashtags have been big for you guys, the Explorer functionality around finding and discovering other people's photos.
I did a little search before I wrote this up, and the hashtag dog, 8.6 million photos, fashion, 22 million photos, even knitting has 311,000 photos.
Those knitters are crazy.
Those knitters are crazy. I went on there. There is some magnificent sweaters on there. Seriously, though, like, how did you ever anticipate people coming together and tagging their photos and creating communities out of this? Like, do you plan on expanding on those features so people can communicate and share photos like that?
Well, early on, we were just a small group of 100 people beta testing the app. But one of the things we always imagined was, actually, I'll take this back to my days at Odeo, and I remember meeting one of the co-founders of Twitter very, very early on. His name was Noah. And he basically said to me, someday everyone's going to use Twitter, bands are going to use Twitter, celebrities are going to use Twitter, and you're going to be able to, like, understand what people are thinking at a moment's notice. And I was like, that's weird, because, like, there are 80 of us using it right now. Right? No, it's true, though. There was a moment in time when, you know, Google had a couple users. There's a moment in time where Facebook was Harvard only. And Instagram had that same moment where we were tiny, but you had to think big. And one of the things I think we've done very well at is continuously challenge ourselves to define a mission, to define our vision. And part of it, I think, is enabling people to use visual media as the most rich expression of what they want to get out in the world, whether they're communicating about activism, whether they're communicating about a band they love, or how do you cook a meal. Like, we believe visual media can be the way they can do that. I think hashtags are a way of organically gathering these things together.
So let me ask you about, you mentioned how to cook a meal. Right now, I would argue that the tool itself is, it's pretty straightforward. You take a photo, you tag cooking or whatever it may be. I'm cooking pot roast, whatever.
Yeah.
How do those tools evolve to become something richer? Like, how do you bring people together so that is, are we talking like eventually Instagram does video? Like, where does this go?
I think, you know, not a lot of people know what hashtags are. A lot of people in the audience here, I think, take it for granted that hashtags are a way of categorizing your posts. So when you post a photo on Instagram, you simply tag it with a word, a keyword. And that keyword puts that photo in a big pool of photos similarly tagged. And when you go on the service on one of our tabs, you can actually type in any keyword, like you said, cooking,
sure,
and see all the cooking images. What I've seen is it's a great way to discover. It's a great way to discover new users, new content, things you would have never expected on Instagram. Just type in a word, everything from knitting to pot roast, right? And what that does is you form communities. So what we've seen are small communities gather around surfing. We've seen small communities gather around actual locations. And I think just allowing people to find each other is the key to Instagram. And because we introduced hashtags so early on, it meant that those communities could really grow from the very beginning. And I think that's key to where we're going in the future as well.
Will you create more tools so that can be a richer experience, though? Like, for cooking, for example, you know, it's typically someone saying, take a look at my dish, but really there was 15 steps, 15 photos that went into creation of something like that.
Right. And,
I mean, is that something where you eventually create groups or collections of images? Like, is that something you're even considering or looking at?
One of the earliest, we actually sketched out Instagram very, very early on. Mike and I sat down at a cafe not too far from where we're sitting today and sketched out every page of the app. And in fact, groups was one of the pages that we built on paper and never actually ended up implementing. So I could absolutely see us building richer tools for people to come together. I think that Instagram's mission is to capture and share the world's moments. And if we can build the tools that allow you to capture and share those moments with the right people at the right time, I think we will have succeeded. And I think there's a lot that can go into that that doesn't stay in what the current version of Instagram is today.
Even hashtags for us came out of us seeing what people were doing. They wanted to run things like photo contests, just like the one they did for this event. And they came up with like the craziest like Rube Goldberg machine. Like, I created a second account, so if you mention this account, I'll watch for those mentions and then I'll collect them into this. Like, people really wanted this feature. They just were telling us by misusing our product, basically. And we watched them misuse our product for long enough. We're like, you know what? Like, this would be a great area to do it in. And similar to that, we watch people all the time and say, like, all right, how is somebody like Jamie Oliver, who has, you know, a ton of cooking books, has a huge audience, how is he expressing his, you know, his recipes? How is he talking about food? How can we make that better?
Mm-hmm. And one of our product philosophies from the very beginning, I read this book in high school called Chaos. It talks about chaos theory. And it talks about how very simple rules, when put into large systems, can create really beautiful emergent patterns. So simple rules like be able to hashtag, be able to location tag, be able to share with your friends, might all seem very, very basic. But when put together, really beautiful patterns can emerge within communities and even like causes. Like I think, you know, a lot of people have used Instagram to get out the word about their causes. And I think that those simple rules, keeping it simple, that's one of our values, simplicity first, I think mean that Instagram can be extremely powerful in its simplicity.
So what do you think of Vine? Like capturing small videos and sharing them? Is that something you'd ever add, something similar to that type of functionality?
I think Vine is a really interesting evolution of mobile video. And not a lot of people here are on the radio might know what Vine is, but it's a lot like Instagram, but it captures video instead. And I think that when I said Instagram's mission is to capture and share the world's moments, I didn't say that Instagram is here to capture all the world's photography. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like I've said for a long time, we've always been really interested in video, and I think Vine has done that very well. That being said, I think it's about right time, right place, right tools, right technology. I mean, how many people have thought about the times they've pulled out their phone and they can barely get an image to load? And I think that video in general, just putting Vine aside for a second, video in general faces an extreme challenge in that you're trying to put over the wire the equivalent of 30 pictures per second to a given person. And that's just a really difficult experience in mobile. So I think whoever ends up achieving, I think, success in video in mobile will figure out the keys to making that a fast, beautiful, and fun experience.
Do you guys still have full control over the product? Meaning, like, you decide what features are built, like photo tagging, for example, that you just recently added. That was something that you guys came up with and said, I want to build this, and just went and built it.
We have a roadmap for our, like, a backlog or roadmap. You can call it either of those because it feels like both. But we know what we've wanted to work on for a really long time. And for the very longest time, we were just constrained by having 2, 3, 4, 5 engineers. Now we have 16, which is not a huge team, but it's a bigger team.
I can't believe you're still only 16. I know. Over 100 million users.
It's insane.
It's insane.
6 people on the infrastructure team. So, we do. We have all this, we have all the autonomy to say, all right, which of these next things we want to tackle? And it's a great position to be in, to look at that list of things like, oh wow, we really want to get around to this. Like, what are we working on for the next 3 or 6 months? Like, what are the next big bets we're taking? And what we've always tried to do, instead of going really wide, like we could have added all sorts of bells and whistles. It's like, how do we make this experience in our app better? Like, how can we go deeper on it? We took some time, you know, 3, 4 months ago and made our whole camera and sharing experience better. The one that we had worked fine, but it could be better. And if people are going to interact with your product every day, if you make that a little better, or in our case, I think we made it substantially better, that's a happiness that will sort of multiply every time they use your product. So, but to answer your original question, yeah, we still have a ton of autonomy and it feels really good, actually.
What do you guys, how do you feel about taking Instagram and porting it? Like right now, you're iOS, Android, Google Glass in the future, digital SLRs in the future, like would you ever go in those worlds and different devices?
Instagram will never be confined to just a single platform or a single device. It just so happens that a mobile phone, I think, is the right way to use Instagram today. I don't know where devices are going to go. I think Google Glass is fantastically interesting. Do I know how widely adopted it will be in the next year? No, I have no idea. But we're excited about the fact that technology is changing, and then Instagram can be there to be the place you capture and share the world's moments. So, I mean, we were on iOS, which are all Apple's devices, for very long. In fact, I think for the first year and a half.
Yeah.
First year and a half. So much so, actually, in the audience, how many people here are on Android? Raise your hand. Okay, so I'd say almost half, actually. Thinking about that.
I don't think that was half.
Really? I was looking out there.
I think you looked at like 10 people and said half.
Larry Sergey, checks in the mail.
I think I'm fired now, basically.
Okay, so for everyone on radio, to
Good
be
times.
Fair, there are really bright lights shining on us right now. All right, where to go, Kev? So let's get back. They're going to edit that out, right?
I think so.
Okay, great. One, two, three. No, I have to count backwards. Let's put it this way. What percentage of our users are Android?
Like half.
About half. Okay, so of all Instagram users, they're about half. So I was guessing. The truth comes out. No, I totally lost my train of thought.
No, tell me. So it was. I remember us being. And I think this actually speaks to the theme of our company, which is you have to be okay with taking a risk that might annoy or make some of your users angry. So with going from Bourbon to Instagram, we lost two of our most passionate Bourbon users because they were on Android and they're like, I can't use your product anymore. Thanks a lot, Mike and Kevin.
Yep.
You know, so.
Well, you have 99.9 something million, so you're
well,
good.
At the time it was like, all right, we didn't know what we were giving it up for. We knew that we wanted to build something that was iOS only to start because we were two guys and we wanted to focus on something specific. And actually I felt really similar when we went Android. I remember there being a huge, or what seemed huge if you looked at the surface, is you often have to understand in an online community, some people get really upset and angry and very vocal and you have to take a step back and say, am I listening to the majority here? Am I listening to a very, very vocal and worth listening to and considering, but still a minority?
Sure.
And that was the case when we launched Android. I remember Instagram's going to be the worst. It's going to get ruined when you add all these Android people in there. It was like they're just other people. They use
Mike,
phones.
Careful. Half of the people in this room will come after you.
One third. Let's be generous. So, and it was... And I remember we launched, and sure, there was like a month of some people being upset, and now everybody just takes for granted that we're on both devices. And that pattern is repeated over and over again, and you have to be okay with saying, you know what, we have an opinion, we have a hypothesis. One of the things we say, it's something that we picked up from school, is we may not always be right, but we're not confused. Instead of like sitting around and being like, oh, I don't know, like maybe we shouldn't go Android, maybe we should, we're just like, let's do Android, and we can learn from what we learn. And it's been the philosophy we've taken on.
Let's talk about, quickly change directions and talk about the acquisition days. Because I know
day.
You guys probably
did.
Day?
It was like a couple of days, yeah.
Who reached out there? Was it actually like Zuck, like ringing your doorbell kind of thing? Or like, what?
It was like Sunday morning, I was eating eggs, I woke up and there
and
was
he's
Zuck.
In your room.
Yeah, he's in my living room.
That would be awkward.
Facebook
that.
Knows everything. No, so...
Who reached out first?
It's a great question, and it's a hard one to answer because Mark and I met in 2005. I believe it was 2005, so it was my junior year in college. He was in a dorm room in my fraternity, hanging out with this guy who knew a lot about tech in our fraternity, and he introduced himself as Mark. And I was like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And the guy in the room was like, he made Facebook. And and that was like a really cool thing to drop in college.
Does he have a guy that just stands next to him?
No, that's my friend.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing. This guy made Facebook. But we met then, and I remember thinking like, oh, this guy's really interesting, and he's working on a cool project. And so, long story short, I mean, like there was a time when I was thinking of leaving school and working at Facebook very early on. Decided to stick through school. And we just kept in touch, and I think that relationship meant that we had a continuing conversation. And I mean, Mark does this really great thing in that he really cares about a lot of entrepreneurs, and he'll reach out to lots of folks starting interesting companies, and I think it's part of his philosophy of just like continuing to learn about what's out in the world and how people are thinking about emerging technologies. So, you know, Mike and I had that relationship set up, and I think that it was less of a one call and more of an evolving relationship over time. So that's why it's kind of hard to answer.
But was it like a thing where, well, when did the actual like topic come up though? Like were you hanging out? Were you having coffee? Like what was he like, hey, I think we should buy you.
Yeah.
Like,
actually, yes. It was a lot like that. I can't remember what the exact words. It's kind of like dating. Okay. So it's like, I can see the headlines now. Kevin Sisson dates Mark Zuckerberg. God. Geez, I'm going to have a shovel. So,
3, 2, 1.
So, I'm never going to get through this. He and I were hanging out, and I remember him saying, like, you know, would you ever imagine a world where, like, Facebook and Instagram are combined? And that took a while to kind of have an honest answer to. And I think that that was the beginning of a couple conversations that, you know, eventually led to us combining forces and I think creating a really awesome partnership between Instagram and Facebook. I mean, we've been able to grow from a tiny team of 16 at the time to well over 34 on our proper team. And by the way, like over 100 other people supporting Instagram stuff on a daily basis. We would not be here today in the form we are without Facebook. And I think that that's a testament to how committed they've been to help us grow and grow independently.
He must have saw you as a threat, though. Like, why would he buy you guys?
Because I'm really
tall. Yeah, he's
I don't know. Like, we never talked about threats specifically. Like, what we talked about were how our two products shared to each other. So, for instance, when you're on Instagram, one of the features is you can take a photo and share it out to multiple services. So one of the questions we got very, very early on was, like, why would I use Instagram if I can just use Facebook or Twitter or something else? And our answer to that was, actually, you can take a photo and beam it to all these places all at once. And that was one of the key features, I think, from very early on that made people excited about using Instagram. So when Mark and I talked about what we could create in the future together, it was very much about how do these integrations go even deeper? How does sharing become even more of a thing? And what other integrations can we do going forward that we wouldn't have done as separate companies? So I think that really drove it. And honestly, I mean, there are a lot of people that use Instagram and use Facebook. And I think it's kind of like a portfolio theory of grabbing things that are awesome, putting them together and creating a menu of options for your consumers.
So speaking about the menu of options, like I'll say something that definitely you guys couldn't say is that, you know, Facebook's, what are they, 8, 9 years old now? And they don't feel like the hot, new, cool startup, whereas you guys do. Why do these social networks age? Like how long, why is it that they're no longer like hip? Like you guys are the hot thing right now. Like what is it that, why do consumer habits change over time? Do you have any theories on that?
I think you grow, early on it's the people who are fresh and joined right then and there with you. It's probably your most current friends. A year later it might not be the same friends.
Your parents join basically.
Your parents join. The people you know a year ago aren't necessarily there. Actually I think that's one. You know, from the beginning on Instagram, you follow other people and they can follow you back, but it's asymmetric. You don't have to follow the people who follow you. And in the end, that means you can curate your experience. And if a year down the line, you're like, you know what? Kevin takes good photos. I want to keep following him, but my friend Jim kind of sucks now. I'm going to unfollow them. That's fine. And they don't get a notification like this person's not following you anymore, right? So that lets
you... It's not as heavyweight as, like, say, a Facebook relationship where it's like this very much two-way thing. I mean, they have following, but...
Sure. But, yeah, and we've just tried to keep it really simple. And I think that's the key 3 years from now to feeling like your Instagram is still yours and not, like, weighed down with anything.
And companies reinvent themselves, right? I think that not being... new is by definition true because they've been around for 9 years. And I mean, that happens to every network.
Sure.
Every single startup goes through a phase, the honeymoon phase of, this is the most exciting and new thing I've ever, like, had my hands on. And by the way, that phase for Instagram continues today. Like, I meet people that literally love Instagram. It's passionate. It's about emotion to them. And that gets me up every morning. The fact that I can wake up and, you know, commute down to Menlo Park all the entire hour drive.
That sounds horrible.
Thinking about going to, well, you do it too.
No, once a week.
The fact that I can go down and work with a team that's working on a product that inspires so many people, like, that's what gets me out of bed in the morning. And I just, like, I love working on it. I love thinking that we have a canvas of, you know, well over 100 million users that use this every single month. That are like causing real change in the world. So every day brings new challenges to us, and I think that's what keeps it new and interesting for us. And I mean, honestly, we're just like two really happy guys that love working on a product that a lot of people love, and I think that's part of what comes through in our brand and how we act.
I think Kevin touches on something really good there, which is here in the Silicon Valley, like, people have generally heard of Instagram. I stopped qualifying it like, oh, it's this app that, like, lets you share, you know, with your friends. People generally know what it is now. But, you know, we've had all this international growth over the last 6 months. Russia has really taken off for us. And for those people, like, maybe they'd heard it, but they'd never used it. And for them, it's like they're discovering it for the first time, mm-hmm. and it's fresh and new. So you're new to somebody every day.
Yeah. You know? You guys mentioned at one point, I mean, now... you're part of Facebook who makes money, but at one point you said Instagram will eventually become a sustainable business
on its own.
What will that look like and when will that happen?
I mean, obviously when we went out to venture capitalists, who are the folks that give you checks early on when you make no money in order to start a company, we made a promise that Instagram was going to become a self-sustaining business. And that promise still holds true today. And in fact, you know, Facebook paid quite a bit of money to have Instagram come in. So like, that doesn't really make sense if you think this thing's never going to make any money. So we've always had plans. It's about when and it's about how. Mike and I care so deeply about the community and how the product works. We want to make sure that the experience, no matter whether we're introducing a new feature or introducing some form of advertising, that it like feels right and feels right to the community and feels right to the app, and that it doesn't fundamentally change the experience you guys all love. Like, we all love Instagram so much, and we want to make sure that that experience echoes that feeling and that it feels at home. At the same time, I actually think there are ways where, like, think about the magazine Vogue, for instance. I mean, how many times do people open up Vogue and, like, half the pages are advertising? And I'm not saying half of our app is going to be advertising, but my point is,
we're going to be just like that.
It turns out people, like, in some ways, if done correctly, can think advertising is really compelling. And I think there are certain examples out in the world of companies and publications and media channels that do it very, very well and are very thoughtful about it. And that's what we're here to do. But first and foremost, we're here to make awesome products. And advertising simply supports the ability for us to be a business in the long run that gets to achieve that mission of capturing and sharing the world's moments. Like, we want to be around for, you know, many, 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 many years. And in order to do that, we need to support our endeavors.
So Yahoo last week with their photo app /service Flickr announced Pro Accounts, where like more storage capabilities, higher resolution photos, whatever it is. Like, will you ever have any type of like Pro Account where people actually pay as a member? Have you thought about that at all?
So Flickr's had Pro Accounts. I was a Pro user for a while.
I guess they reconfigured it and more space and.
We just like we're not in the business of, I think, charging folks a subscription. It's just like people ask about premium filters, and it's like. It's just not what gets me up in the morning to build a big business. And I think Mike and I are really passionate about building a business that's sustainable and that brings in real revenue. And we haven't seen that be true with a lot of these subscription models, especially around services that, like, you know, Instagram is very unique in that its community is very, very strong, and that's our greatest asset. But the technology, you know, anyone can make a filter app. And we want to make sure that we make our community feel loved and feel like, you know, they don't have to pay to access the features that we want to build for them.
When was the last time you launched a new filter?
That's a good question. Maybe like 3 months ago, maybe 3 or 4 months ago.
Is that something you plan on just like constantly tweaking and rolling out new filters over time? Or?
So, like, I'm going to say something to this room and everyone listening at home that I think will surprise you. It's that Instagram's not a photography company. And I said this the first day I went to Facebook, and people kind of looked at me like, actually, yeah, it is a photography company. Like, it's not. It's a communications company. It's about communicating a moment and sending it to another person or people in real time. It just so happens that that message happens to be an image. And the more we think about Instagram just as photography, of course, in our core of our DNA, we are about photography. And of course, we want to make images beautiful. And of course, we believe in photographers and photographers' rights, etc. But it's something more than that. It's about communicating a message. And we've dialed it down to the point where we realize that the features we work on, I think, are going to be about community and about communication. And we don't wake up in the morning thinking about what 4 filters can we add tomorrow, because frankly, that's driving straight into photography. And what we'd rather see is other apps on the outside innovate and make awesome filters. Like, there are a ton out there that I use on a daily basis, and then I bring the photos into Instagram and broadcast to the world. We want innovation to happen there, and we want to leave room for innovation to happen. And we want to focus on the network and the communication aspect.
Do you think that Instagram becomes more of a almost like a news outlet in the way that Twitter almost is? Like, you go to Twitter, you see trending topics, breaking news. I feel like I saw a bunch of different photos on Instagram from during the horrible things that happened in Boston recently Do you see it as becoming this like real-time platform for people saying like, wow, I just caught something amazing and I want to share that out? Are those the type of tools you want to help promote?
We had a moment maybe 2 weeks ago where the maintenance guys from Facebook, this is like an amazing thing of working at a bigger company, is that if you have a thought like we should have TVs on the walls, that can happen within like a day. And it's not like your main engineer like taking a day off to go install a TV. They have like a whole department that helps you out with that stuff. And they install two televisions above our community team, which was actually our very, very first hire was Josh, and he started our community team, and it was all about interacting with the community, sourcing great content. We have an awesome blog at blog.instagram.com, and they installed two televisions now above the community team that are constantly just playing CNN, CNBC, just news channels 24/7. Mm-hmm. And when they spot interesting things going on around the world, be it happy news, a riot, the horrible stuff in Boston, they turn to the community and say, like, can we source human stories that are happening right now through Instagram? And if you look at a lot of the photos that happen, when there was that explosion in Texas a couple of months ago, I went on and I was looking at the hashtag that represented that city, and I was going through, and almost every photo had a comment from somebody from, for example, from CNN, like, wow, that's an incredible photo you took outside your house, because they live there, and it's right. Authentic, it's taken with their mobile phone. Can I use it in a broadcast? And we're seeing that more and more, where people are both turning to Instagram to share and communicate, and also looking at Instagram as a source of saying, like, what are real people experiencing right here and now?
And they're primarily doing that through hashtags, do you think? How are they finding these photos?
It's hashtags, it's location tags, so also, who else is in this location? Like, what are people taking photos of right here and now?
Do you think you'll provide, you know, one of the things, I was at the ballpark watching the Giants play, and I just pulled up the stadium, and I was watching the photos that were coming in. And they weren't real time because I was having a client kind of hit refresh. Like, will you provide more tools around that so people can see and explore something like that at an event that's happening in real time?
Right now we're very much about, like, the latest photos as they stream in, but we've mm-hmm. often talked about how can we surface the most interesting photos or the best photos or have a mix of live and the best. And it's something that we've often turned to and saying, right now we call it V1, version 1 of a lot of things at Instagram. And one of those is the, like, recent photos of a hashtag, recent photos of an event page. But one thing that gets me up in the morning, gets me really excited, is we have all this metadata. We have great photos and we have great content. How can we surface that in a more interesting way? How can we surface the best stuff? Because eventually, you know, we have 5 billion plus photos. That gets really overwhelming. Like, there's no way you'll sift through all of that. And we can help.
Do you eventually get into the search game? Like, is that something, I know you have search within the app, but is that something that on the desktop side that you eventually get into so people can say, this window of time, this location, show me the photos?
I think that search is interesting for Instagram in a different way than, say, search might be interesting for Google or Yahoo or how we use web search today. The cool part about Instagram photos is that the large majority of them are produced in the moment, live. They're basically a real-time view into the world. And you have to ask yourselves, one of our product philosophies at the beginning is solve problems. We believe that every product we build has to solve a user's problem. And when we tackle search, it's got to be, okay, like, why do you want to search, and how are you going to use search, and what problem is this search going to solve? So seeing nearby photos, I think, could be cool, but it's like, what problem does that solve for you? Mm-hmm. Now, I could imagine, for instance, walking down the street and saying, I wonder what that brunch place is like. I wonder what breakfast they serve. Like, is it any good? And being able to scroll through that. Like, I want to support that behavior. So I think there's something to location. I think there's something to topic. I think there's something to people. And I think we have, like Mike said, a lot of V1.0s of that. But like I said, you know, one of our pieces of vision is a real-time view into the world. And whether it's something as, you know, meaningful as this one user, Syrian developer, who basically takes pictures from Syria about the conflict happening there in real time, everything from crumbled buildings to explosions happening to, you know, a family friend that lives on the East Coast that I keep in touch with through Instagram, it can be a real-time view into everyone's world. And I think that's super powerful. And it's almost like search is happening for you and that it's presenting the content to you you didn't know you were looking for.
Gotcha. So real quick, I want to announce to the audience that we're going to be taking your questions in a few minutes. So if you have any questions, write your name and a question on a card, or you can tweet your questions to @InForumSF, and we'll be taking those in just a couple minutes. So, outside of Instagram, what are your favorite apps? What are you guys really liking right now? What kind of like sectors or what's on your home screen?
I'm dealing with the Google Reader death like process now, trying to find a substitute. So I'm playing a lot with like different news apps and ways of surfacing good content and saying like, all right, like I'm using this app called NewsBlur. And I liked what he was doing with that because, again, surfacing good recommendations based on what you already like and saying, hey, this news article I read, I want to see more of this, and can we train an algorithm to be better about it and give me more relevant things going forward? So That's my main thing. But honestly, it's often that I get home and I'm like, I'll play with Instagram, I'll do some work, and like then turn the phone off as much as possible.
Yeah.
I'm really inspired by music. I listen to music all day. I love music. And one of my favorite radio stations is in actually Santa Monica. It's called KCRW. And they play very – yes, excellent. They play really independent music. And actually very early on in Instagram's history, we got to visit their studio and take some photos. But they actually have an app, and I love it. And it lets me listen to radio that isn't accessible where I live. Otherwise, it's just on your mobile phone. And that got me into Spotify, which they have an app for, and I can discover new music. So I create playlists, and I discover other people's playlists. And Pandora, which helps me randomly walk the web of music. And I think, like, those three apps are probably my most used apps on my phone. And I think, like, there's going to be a revolution in music in mobile. And I think it's, you know, a combination of all three of those. It's local access to content, but it's also on-demand streaming, and it's discovery. I think it's, like, those three apps together are my favorite apps in the world.
Sweet. All right, so I've got a few questions here from the audience. Did you guys have full-time jobs when you built Instagram, and is it possible to be a successful entrepreneur with a full-time job? That's a question from Mike.
So neither of us did when we launched Instagram and went deep into it, but the things that went into Instagram, I think, germinated over a long period of time when we did a full-time job. So I learned how to code iOS development, so building for the iPhone on the weekends. I would go to this coffee shop called Coffee Bar in San Francisco, and I built this app that was about seeing crimes in San Francisco. So the San Francisco government has like a huge open data set, and one thing you can do is say, all right, give me all the crimes that happened over this period in San Francisco. And I was like, that's an interesting data set. It might teach us something about the city. What's the most dangerous part? I used to go to the Bayview and it would crash the app because there was so much crime. And I was like, okay, like this is like the test case that I would use. It turns out there's a lot of arson everywhere. So anyway, there was a good like period there where I would just like spend the weekend and, you know, maybe it wasn't, well, I was going to say it wasn't the most social thing, but it actually was a really social thing because there's like often a community of people who's also interested in building. And that's actually how I ran into Kevin for the first time since we'd graduated, was he was there working on some things that eventually became Bourbon there too. So I guess to answer the question directly, I think to do what we did requires a full-time attention, but that the ideas and the knowledge and the skills come from a lot of years, and you can develop those even while you still have a full-time job.
Great. Next question from Aaron. What is your ultimate goal? What do you want Instagram to change in the world of tech or art or communication?
I think I said a couple of times, but I'll repeat it, that our mission is to capture and share the world's moments. Success to us in the future is where everyone in the world has the Instagram app that lets them share what's happening in their lives as it happens with whomever they want. And I think why that's important is because part of our human nature is staying in touch. It's why we have tables during holidays and we get around the table and we have a meal. We stay in touch around these moments. And I think that Instagram connects people in a way that I haven't seen anything else connect them. Through these moments in our lives, that's everything from a baby's first step to a graduation party to a grandmother and a daughter walking down a street. Like, I've seen all of this on Instagram. And the ultimate goal is to make that ubiquitous. There are more cell phones in the world, or there will be very soon, than computers. Places like Brazil, I mean, Mike's from Brazil, and he goes home and he sees more people using cell phones than are connected to the internet in Brazil on computers. And I think that that like amount of connectivity with a mobile phone means that Instagram can be the key to making sure that we realize that vision.
Great. This question is being asked actually a few times. Joe and David both want to know, what is your favorite filter and your least favorite filter?
We got to say toaster because it's...
Thank you. Yes.
You may or may not know, but Kevin Rose's dog, Toaster, is an adorable dog.
Thank you.
Sorry, Trotter. Trotter might be going, the other celebrity dog here today.
Trotter's cute. I saw the account.
Today. We have a filter named after him, so that I'll be diplomatic and
nice.
Say that.
Nice. Appreciate
one.
That.
I'm curious what. Actually, don't answer the other part of the question yet, because I wonder if ours lines up. My favorite filter, I believe, is Rise. And not many people know the reason why it's called Rise. It was actually made by one of our users, Cole Rise. And he's a very talented photographer that we met very early on and gave the beta app to. And I remember him using it and turning to us and going, this is going to be big someday. And thinking, like, this guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But he believed in us from the very beginning. And we ended up working with him around creating some filters. And he just, like, he has some of the most beautiful photography on his account, which is just at Cole Rise. And it means the world to me that he was able to create a filter for us that really, I think, epitomizes what his photography is about. My least favorite is Kelvin, which there's a reason why it's all the way on the right-hand side. There are people that make these decisions, and yes, it's on purpose. But if we got rid of it, I think I'd have a riot on my hands, which I could document with Instagram. But, like, honestly, we got rid of, I think, two, Gotham, and what was the other one? Gotham was one of the ones we got rid of very early on. And we had a couple other ones. Apollo was another one that we got rid of, that are like the lost filters. But every time I meet someone, I'll go to a conference or something and they'll be like, hi, you're Kevin from Instagram, right? And I'm like, yes. They're like, bring back Gotham, and they'll walk off. So I know not to touch the filters now. I just put them really far away.
But you realize it's like if 1% of people use something, that's a million people now. So that's a lot of people to be angry at you. So
yeah. Yeah. A lot of death threats there.
Seriously.
Why the square format on the photos, Tim asks.
We, very early on, were thinking about photography, and we wanted to make it really easy to compose photos. And it turns out when you don't have a square, you have to think about what's in the two-thirds rule and how does this work. And actually, with a square photo, it's so easy and simple to take a photo and make it look beautiful. I'll say another reason was in college I took a photography class and they handed me this plastic camera called a Holga camera that took square photos. And I was always really attracted to that. But I think the real answer, and I think Mike will attest to this, is that it's just really easy to show square photos in a feed. Because if you have long photos, it takes up a little space. But if you have tall photos, it takes up a ton of space. And we wanted something that felt digestible in the feed. And I think all three of those are reasons. But I won't tell you which one dominates.
What about, the iPhone added the panoramic mode where you can take these really beautiful, long kind of landscape type photos. Would you ever add support for that? And like where you tap, you could zoom in? Or is it just always going to be square?
I think, we're open to it. There's a lot of the app is built so that, it's square, but it could be a different way as well. But I think to us, like, again, to go back to something that Kevin said earlier, it's like, what problem is that solving? Maybe the problem is you want to see more of what's going on there. The way people solve that now, sometimes they'll use apps that let you put multiple photos in one photo so they can show more of what's going on. We're definitely open to it.
Yeah, I think we're always open to, like, new technologies and new formats. I think it's about what problem does it solve and like, when.
Next one, Nicole asks, Hollerback is being called the next Instagram. What are your thoughts?
I am obviously too old because I don't know what Hollerback is.
I don't know what it is either. Does anyone use Hollerback at all? Half of the audience does.
Half of the audience.
I'm kidding. All right. Video messaging app.
Cool.
Okay.
Maybe, I will download
the,
it after.
Is that the CEO out there that wrote that question? That would be amazing. Yeah.
I love it.
Amazing.
All right. We just got you like 20 downloads. All right. All right. Christina says, I see that people love making products from their Instagram photos. Have you ever thought of partnering with a company like Shutterfly, not only for hosting Instagram photos, but for creating an Instagram product line?
We have specifically stayed out of the physical goods space, again, because we said we're not a photography company. Very early on, I said to Mike, like, whatever we do, we're never making mouse pads. We're never making mugs. Like, that's not the business model. It's just about the depth of what we want to create with communication and that network. And partnering with is, I think, a more formal term, but like Mike and I built the API, which is essentially a way for third-party developers to build products that plug into Instagram and let you export your photos to those services. So I don't think we're ever going to necessarily like build one ourselves, but we'd rather just partner with others that are doing that as a full-time thing.
Which I love. Like, people will create, like, Instagram printers that will print any photo taken at your event. Or Instagram, I went to one of my favorite restaurants here in San Francisco, it's called Nopa, and I was, like, going to the bathroom, and on one of their walls, they have like, a huge, like, collage of, like, hundreds of Instagram photos taken there, and, like, I didn't know about it, we didn't know about that product, but somebody was able to create it because we opened it up.
That's awesome. Caroline writes in, do you take all of your own photos, or is it the comms teams that are...
I definitely take all my own photos, but I'm glad that they think they're good enough.
They're good enough. Like,
no, Mike and I definitely take a lot of our photos. In fact, if you scroll back all the way in history, a lot of close-ups of sandwiches, and it's like really not that pretty. I feel like a lot of pressure to take beautiful photographs because I see so many beautiful photographers that I've like thought of taking a photo class just to like sharpen my eye a little bit. I mean, you take all yours, so.
I will say like to that question, part of what makes people love following people like Jamie Oliver, Justin Bieber, people on Instagram who are celebrities, is that you can tell that in almost every case it's them taking the photos. It's like on their cell phone. There's no way of uploading on your computer, so it's less of a team uploading. It's like selfie in the mirror kind of situation, you know? And I think that
selfie. The one counterexample was
selfies.
Snoop Dogg for like the longest time. All the photos were
of him. Yeah.
And everyone was like, wait a second, Snoop Dogg.
Here, take a photo of me.
Mike, you just mentioned no way to upload photos from your computer. This guy, Michael, he writes in, as a pro photographer, I post both DSLR and iPhone pics to Instagram. Was your initial intention of Instagram limited strictly to cell phone images, or did you intend for images from all mediums to be shared?
Basically all mediums. One decision we had to make early on was, like, do you allow people to upload from their camera roll or not? It's funny because some people on Instagram take it very seriously and they're like, it's cheating if you do it from a DSLR or a digital camera. To me, it's all about the expression and the source of the image is less important. In a lot of ways, like, you define your own rules of your game in Instagram. Like, you can have fun and constrain yourself. One of our earliest hires' name was Jessica, and she had a constraint where she posted photos using a single filter for like a year and a half maybe. And like, that's the game you play and that's fine. So I think it's all about creating your own rules.
All right, real quick, for the people that are in the audience out there that are just joining us, this is the Commonwealth Club Inform Connect Your Intellect. For more information about Inform and its upcoming events, please visit facebook.com/InformSF or follow @InformSF on Twitter and also @InformSF on Instagram. Tonight we're hosting a no-filter conversation with the founders of Instagram, Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger. A few more questions for you guys. We've got a few minutes left. How do you feel about later-gramming, Meredith asks.
I'm all for it. I think that, like, one thing that we'll
Let's explain later-gramming real quick for everyone out
there.
Sure.
Everyone's scratching their heads. Okay, so a couple of things. Later-gramming is the idea of taking a photo with your camera at one time and then uploading it many hours, perhaps many days later. So if you're at a party, you snap a photo and you decide you don't want it to upload it on Instagram at that moment, but you import it from your camera roll and then share it perhaps a day later. That's a later-gram. I totally don't think there's an issue with it. In fact, as long as you share that moment with the world, it's okay. The one thing I'll say about the web is, like, the reason why we don't have web uploading is because we want photos to be of real life, and we want them to be of the moment as much as possible. It's all about defaults, and that's all we're trying to encourage. But later-gramming, I think, is totally fine, because sometimes what I'll do is take a bunch of photos, and then only after, you know, a few hours, I'll decide which one I really like, and then I share it with the world. But it is a controversial practice.
There's some apps out there, like Time Hop is a good one, and there's a handful of them out there that take you back in time, like a year, 2 years back. Is that something that you would ever get into on Instagram, like helping resurface some of those great moments that you've had in the past?
Some of the things we've launched over the last year kind of let you do that. So one thing we added maybe 6 or 7 months ago was the ability to explore your photos on a photo map. And that was a project we did, because what we realized was that the current way at the time that you could browse Instagram was purely chronological. But that's not always the way you think about photos. You know, I took a trip to France a year and a half ago, and if I wanted to get to those photos, I've probably taken 1,000 photos since then. It would be a long time scrolling. But on a photo map, it says like, oh, you took 4 photos in Paris, and you tap and it goes straight there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that feature.
And it's, you know, even if you don't use that feature every day, there's some specific times where it's perfect. We also launched Photos of You pretty recently. The idea there also was, sometimes people take a photo, you're in the photo because you were together at this event or on a beach or something, and being able to go back to those photos by saying, oh yeah, I was in that photo, or this person was in that photo. Mm-hmm. Again, it's figuring out different ways of slicing the information.
Awesome. Next question. You said that hiring the right people is one of the key factors of your success. What skills are you looking for when you hire?
We'll do a duo answer. I look for entrepreneurs. I look for entrepreneurs not just in the traditional sense of people starting their own companies, but people who go out of their way to find novel solutions to problems, people who love exploring problems just for the sake of solving them. So whether it's figuring out how to build a model car, or whether it's someone who figures out how to build an app to solve a problem that they have in daily life, entrepreneurs that take resources, gather them, and build solutions for things in the world.
Yeah, to me it's, you look around, I'll take our back-end infrastructure team as an example. We've never hired based on degrees. Like, that's just not what we've been about. So,
do you hire college dropouts?
We hire almost exclusively college dropouts. I feel like that. Our very first engineering hire.
If you want to work at Instagram, don't go to college.
So our very, very first hire was Shane, and he like dropped out of high school. And I was looking around our infrastructure team, and we have 2 PhDs who aren't working at all related to their PhD that they did, 2 people that either never finished high school or college, and 2 people that did college. So it's all over the place. And to me, the number one thing, and it speaks a lot to entrepreneurship, but the key thing for me is that curiosity and ability to pick things up. And we started from day one. And actually, this advice that our humble moderator here gave us early on, he's like, don't hire people that know how to do one thing and that's all they do. Like, hire people who are willing to learn, because you're going to change directions. Maybe you start coding in Python and later you code in C, and you don't want people to freeze up and say, I don't know C. I'm going to go work somewhere else. Or I'm going to throw up my hands and say, I don't know. Like, I love people who, in the morning, and we've always been this way. When we wanted to make our filters 10 times faster, we didn't sit down and go, we really need to hire the one person that knows how to do that. It was Kevin and Shane sitting at a coffee shop in the Mission for like 2 weekends in a row and saying, like, we're going to figure this out. We know we can do it. And then you do it, and it's like magical, and you figure out how it works.
That's awesome. This is an anonymous question, and you know those are always the worst. I heard Instagram, quote unquote, owns all posted photos. Is that true? And then there's a little sad face after it as well.
Absolutely not.
Tell me what happened there. There was, because that was a few months back.
The real question is, like, does Instagram claim ownership over your photos as a photographer? And absolutely not. Like, never ever would we like take any rights that mean we can like sell your photos or do anything to your photos that are weird. Like, I'll be honest, like, there was a time, I think it was December, or like early January, when we rewrote our terms of service as part of joining Facebook. The lawyers were like, wow, that's really out of date. Let's make sure these things are up to date. And frankly, legal language is just really confusing and can be interpreted in many different ways. So much so that, like, the guys in charge of Instagram, when reading it, read it one way, and then a reporter from another publication reads it another way and decides to say that Instagram wants to sell your photos. We never wanted to sell anyone's photos. We don't want to sell any photos. You own your photos. We just are there to facilitate, you know, sharing your photos with the world in a way that you want it to.
Great. So Brero asks, what changes, if any, would you make to the popular page to showcase better images?
Oh, man. A lot. So I think our current popular page right now is, it's, again, maybe 1.1, you know, version 1.1. It's something that we've looked at for a while. And again, like, we purposely call that tab in the application Explore, because that's what we want it to be about. And right now we offer some lightweight ways of exploring, but
there's a lot of selfies on there.
There's a fair amount of selfies. But there's also
what a selfie is.
A selfie is a photo of yourself.
We're on radio here.
On radio,
yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
But it gets me really excited to think about different ways in which we can personalize that a little bit more and say, you know, maybe it's more about where you live and what you're interested in, or you know, what you've expressed before or what your friends are doing. I think there's a ton of potential there. And like, again, what excites me is that the to-do list for Instagram is infinite and we just get to pick what we work on next.
Have you sliced the data like that just to see what it looks like? Like, for example, Twitter allows you to do trending topics based on just San Francisco. Like, mm-hmm. have you looked at, like, just in the city, what is the most popular images look like today? Like, is it interesting data? Like, more so than a global view?
That was going to be my point, is the Explore page is currently a single prescription to everyone. And I think that's one of its weaknesses, is that, you know, if you're someone who really loves Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift, you might actually want to see a lot of Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift content. But if you're a photographer, a professional photographer, you might want to see beautiful sunsets, landscapes, etc. And us figuring out how to tailor the Explore page to, like, what you're interested in, whether it's based on your location, based on your interests, based on hashtags you use, whatever, we have to figure that out. And I think that the Explore page really goes to the core of what I was saying when we want to be a real-time view into the world. Like, we need to make that page that vision. If there was any tab in our app that really needs to live up to what we said we want to be, it's that tab.
And that's coming next, then.
One thing that really struck me was there have been a couple events in the last year. You know, you're like, oh, like, what are people just sharing? What are they sharing on Instagram? What we've seen is that around major events, we always see these really interesting upticks in particular words. Like, for Thanksgiving, we set up a tracker that tracked, like, turkey, turkey day, family. The list was really long, and there was words I didn't even, like, know related to Thanksgiving. But anyway, like, it was really cool to see, like, the spike of photos that talked about turkeys and Thanksgiving. This was really huge, and you could tell people weren't sharing random content. They were sharing the moment. Same with the Super Bowl. Like, we see this over
Sandy.
And over. Hurricane Sandy was another one where, like, mm-hmm. you would see people, like, stages, right? People anticipating, and one of the most common words that was correlated with Sandy at the beginning was bored. Because everybody was like, I'm so bored. I'm waiting for the storm. Here's a selfie of myself, like, preparing for the storm. And then it was like, oh, my God, this is really serious. Like, here's how we're going to rebuild and all that stuff. So it's very real time.
Awesome. Well, we have time for one more question, and it's an informed tradition to ask all of our speakers the following. You guys ready for this? This is the big one. Kevin and Mike, what are your 60-second ideas to change the world? So you each have 60 seconds.
All right, I'll go first. To me, we live in this incredible time where people around the world with some resource, you require some startup resources, but not very much to get something out there, can build something, an app, a piece of software that can be used by millions of people the next day. And that's unprecedented. Like, at no other point could you build your Ware, could you build your, or, you know, construct something that all of a sudden could touch somebody all around the world.
With just a couple people.
With just two people. One of the most beautiful moments, like, early on when smartphones, and particularly the iPhone, were coming out, it was one of the early Smule. They make these music apps. So one of these early apps. And you could, like, play your ocarina, I think is what it was. And
yeah.
then you would see on the globe, like, another ocarina play around the world. And it was so moving. So to me, my 60-second spiel is that we live in this unprecedented time where you can create those connections around the world. And the tools for becoming, you know, possible to be able to do that are becoming more and more affordable. It truly excites me.
Awesome. Kevin?
We talked a little bit about not hiring on degrees, but that doesn't mean that we don't think education is really important. One of the single most influential factors in founding Instagram was the access to educational content online. And I believe that if we take it just from being college classes online to high school classes online to even elementary school classes online, we can give people around the world access to content that allows them to learn new skills, new trades, whether it's iOS programming or history, that gives access to people to, you know, create new jobs, to learn new things, to access parts of the world that you wouldn't have accessed otherwise. And I think that that is a big part of what made Instagram possible. So educational content online for everyone, everywhere in the world, and free is the future that I think will solve all the world's problems.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Excellent. So thank you guys for being on the show. Let's give a big round of applause to Kevin and Mike for giving us an insider look at Instagram. Now this meeting of Inform and the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.
I got my popcorn.